In announcing closures for the rest of the school year yesterday, State Superintendent Chris Rakedahl acknowledged families' struggles with remote instruction. But he said exposing students and staff to the coronavirus is also bad for kids' learning.
A rush back to school puts significant risk in learning continuity that at this time would not be better than the model we are developing and advancing at a distance. We do not want that curve to suddenly spike up because we acted too quickly to come back.
Rakedahl's announcement, along with Governor Jay Inslee, reinforces the fact that social distancing will be our new normal for a while. Joining me live to talk more about this and to give us a sense of what's to come is Olympia correspondent Austin Jenkins. Austin, let's start with explaining why Inslee and Rakedahl decided to keep schools physically closed.
Sure. So the governor yesterday in the news conference said that this is really about getting and giving the state a higher confidence of beating this pandemic, and that it would just be too risky to reopen on-site instruction. His quote was, "We cannot risk losing the gains we have made after the peak of this pandemic will have passed." He also said, and I think that the superintendent was alluding to this, that even though online learning is far from perfect and it leaves some students out, that if you're shutting down schools every other week because somebody tests positive and then they have to shut the schools and isolate people and screen them, that that would be very disruptive. And maybe this will allow for more of a focus on education. But I do want to point to the very last paragraph in his proclamation, the governor's proclamation. It says that school districts should be immediately planning for the potential extension of these prohibitions into the summer and into the fall of 2020. So while we're looking to the end of this school year, I don't think that we are altogether necessarily out of the woods for next fall.
That's right. Well, going from schools to state institutions, some of those institutions can't really close. And you've been reporting about COVID-19 in congregate settings, including prisons. What's the latest there?
Yeah. So the important or milestone development of this week is that the first incarcerated individual in a state prison has tested positive now for COVID-19. This is an inmate at the Monroe Correctional Facility. Previously, there was an inmate who was already out in a community hospital for an unrelated matter who tested positive. So this is the first person inside the prison. And really what we're waiting to see now is, can they contain this? That we know that this individual is in isolation, his unit is in quarantine, but the next 10 to 14 days are going to be really critical to seeing if the prison system, which is overcrowded, can contain this. Some staff members have tested positive already, but again, this is the first inmate.
We're also hearing calls for patients to be released from Western State Hospital, which has seen some infections. Who's calling for this, and how's the state responding to that?
These are the same groups that have been asking the governor and the Secretary of Corrections to reduce the prison population. So Disability Rights Washington, ACLU of Washington, Columbia Legal Services on Friday sent a letter to the Secretary of DSHS asking her to reduce the census at Western State and Eastern State psychiatric hospitals. They're calling for the temporary release of some civil or non-criminal patients, the release of other civil patients to what's called a less restrictive alternative in the community. And they even want the state to consider furloughing some forensic patients who come through the criminal system who have been found not guilty by reason of insanity if they have already been granted what's called conditional release status. They're saying in their letter the DSHS should be aggressive and creative in reducing the patient population. We know that there's an effort to move at least 60 patients who are ready for discharge out of the hospital. Also, they are reducing intakes at Western State and sending some patients who would ordinarily go to Western State over to Eastern State. But these groups don't think that that's enough, not aggressive enough, and want to see more done.
As all this is happening, Austin, there's news that it looks like Washington's starting to flatten the curve. Let's talk about what comes next in the state's coronavirus response.
Well, in talking to the state's epidemiologist for communicable diseases, Dr. Scott Lindquist, he says it's really all about access to testing. He's watching very closely for two things. One is the rapid testing, where the turnaround is a matter of minutes instead of days. That's starting to come online. And he's also looking for the potential for FDA to approve a home test, because really for them to be able to surveil what's happening and catch flare-ups, they need ubiquitous testing, widespread testing, and that's a tool that's missing from the toolkit right now. And he said, really, these measures we're doing for the moment are mitigation and a bridge until there is that more widespread testing.
In addition to the public health issue, the other big worry is the economy. And Governor Inslee recently had to make some budget cuts. And how is this emergency affecting the state budget overall?
Well, we don't know yet, but on April 30th, the state lawmakers will get an unofficial forecast from the state forecaster, and I think that they're expecting it to be very bleak. They're already looking at, potentially losing $3 to $6 billion by the end of this biennium. This is said to be worse than the Great Recession, potentially. So they're bracing for a really tough road ahead budget-wise.
Do you expect a special session maybe? Would lawmakers be able to do that remotely?
Yeah, they're bracing and prepping for that. Maybe not immediately, maybe this fall. And they are saying that they could do it remotely. Maybe where some lawmakers are back in person, but others are remote, voting remotely. They do not see a constitutional barrier to do that. And work is being done right now to figure out the logistics of that.
All right, Austin, thanks so much.
You're welcome.